we got it. DJ Schutz, out the door he goes. Thank you so much, DJ Schutz, for setting me up here, sweet like. And I want to let you know, this out-of-the-box program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the good folks at Kalaheo Chiropractic in Qingyong Village. Check them out.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic, acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyong Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyong, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
Yes, absolutely. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I'm Laura Christine. This is the Out of the Box show from 4 to 6. It's a community affairs program, and today we are going to be joined in the booth by candidate for the county prosecutor, Lisa Aaron. She's here with some members of her campaign team, and we're going to be talking story for about an hour. And then after that, we'll be opening up phone lines. We'll be open at 826-7771. Throughout the show, but I'm just on the front end telling you, there's only one person in here right now. And if I hit the wrong button, call back again at 826-7771. Would appreciate it. I do want to let you know that you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, right here at the beautiful North Shore of the Garden Island, Kauai, in the middle of the Pacific, to be specific, at 90.9 FM up here on Hanalei side, 91.9 almost island-wide, 92.7 in Anohola and Moloa area, and over on the Gathering Place at 104.7 and 95.1 on the cable spot. KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and K224CQ in Anohola, and K284AL in Haleiwa. So, Hana Hano, Hala Eva, I want to do this one really quick because I can.
This is Ron Whaley, KKCR, Hana Lay, and KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
That's right, Ron. Ron, I love you. Here we go, I got to do this one too.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Whoo, that's how. So one more, because at the top of the hour, we got to do this kind of stuff.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
This is Ron Whaley, KKCR, Hanalei. And KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Right on. So thanks again, all you Fund Drive participants, you members and you new members, and just you contributors to our community radio, $65,290 coming in, and 173 new members. So feel free to go online, www.kkcr.org, and hit the donate tab right there on the top menu bar if you'd like to contribute to that ongoing need for KKCR, have a little bit of kala so we can do what we do every day. So I'm going to play just a small, real quick one because DJ Schutz with that wonderful outro. I'm just going to go there right now, and then I'm going to bring in my guests. So we will have some, if you will, live entertainment for you here on Kauai Community Radio. Here we go. Little pogo for you, DJ Shoots. Thank you. Go making a little transition from pogo to number one from way back when. I'm gonna have my my guests here very shortly, as soon as I hit the right button at the right time, get the music like that. Okay. There we go. I fought the law, and the law won. The Bobby Fuller 4. And how apropos, I've got running for the county prosecutor, Lisa Aaron. And I think you're on mic one. So, Lisa, say hi to the listeners of Kauai Community Radio.
Hello, everyone.
Right on. That sounds good to me. And we're joined with also on mic two. My good friend, can you introduce yourself?
I am Mark Ozaki. Thank you for having us.
All righty. Welcome. And number three.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Anthony.
Jennifer, thank you for welcome and thank you for coming. Had invited Lisa to come join us on the radio because this is the time of year when we want to get to know our candidates. So, Lisa, tell us a little bit about yourself and the job of the prosecutor, and why folks want to know more about you and vote for you to be our county prosecutor.
Okay, that's a small topic right there, Jimmy.
Go.
Thank you.
Yeah, we only got 45
it,
more minutes.
Keeping it simple. All right, so my name is Lisa Aaron, and I am a criminal trial attorney, which I have been for over 20 years, both here and in Southern California. I've been on Kauai for 10 years. Kauai is my home, and I worked in the prosecutor's office prosecuting cases here for 6 years. And I love Kauai. I have a lot of concern for the safety of our community because, unfortunately, there is a lot of crime on our island, a lot of violent crime. And just for the listeners to know, I was the sex assault prosecutor here for about 6 years. I also did major crimes of violence and other crimes of violence, including domestic violence. And these are things that need to be taken seriously because it is hurting our community and it's hurting our children. I have a vision for the prosecutor's office, which is why I chose to run. And that vision is to build and maintain a strong and stable prosecutor's office that effectively and successfully prosecutes cases. And I have three prongs to my vision. That's the main one, because if there's success in building and maintaining the office, then everything else will fall into place as far as effectively and successfully prosecuting cases.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the significant issues that is occurring that needs to be addressed and needs to be resolved is that that I will ensure that serious and repeat offenders are prosecuted appropriately and seriously, and make certain that victims' rights are respected and justice is achieved for the victim, the community, and the accused. And what that means is there's varying different types of crimes that occur here on the island. Some is the most serious, your murders, attempted murders, robberies, sexual assaults, other crimes of violence. And we have many other crimes, drugs, thefts, family violence that are affecting our island. And all these issues need to be addressed, or the crime rate will keep increasing. And
if I can, because I think some listeners, like myself, might be a little bit, if you will, in the dark about what does the county prosecutor do?
Okay. So the county prosecutor runs an office of approximately 14 deputy prosecutors and then about 30 or so other staff that help facilitate the process.
So a pretty good-sized department, if you will.
It's a decent-sized department. It's not exceptionally large. Kauai is still relatively small in comparison to other places. And so the prosecutor is tasked with running the office, mm-hmm. making sure the right people are hired and the right people stay in their job, that they're properly supported, and that the cases are being prosecuted effectively. And a very big part of the prosecutor's job is to prosecute cases and to make sure the cases are being prosecuted properly.
So both personally taking on that caseload, as well as delegating or making sure that the, if you will, case against the accused is going to happen.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And making sure that the deputies who are also prosecuting the cases have the skills they need, the tools they need, and the support they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And you were in that position. You have worked for the county prosecutor in the past, and you said you've lived here for about 10 years?
That's right.
And employed with the county for the majority of that time?
For 6 years. The past year, I've been working as a private attorney in assisting the family court because I made the decision last year to run for this office.
So your decision to run, if you will, you chose to leave your position so that you could run for this, office.
I did.
Uh-huh. Now, do other places elect the county prosecutor, or is this kind of different? I don't know. I imagine in Hawaii there's probably other county prosecutors, but in other municipalities, is that the case that the county prosecutor is an elected official?
In the state of Hawaii, each county elects the prosecutor, except I believe Maui County, which that position is appointed by the mayor of
mm-hmm.
Maui.
Mm-hmm.
Other states and counties vary from appointments to elections. It just depends on the county charter or what is the governing agency. Mm-hmm. I think that it's not unusual for it to be an elected position across the United States.
So the position of the county prosecutor is a supervisor role as well as an administrator, and what else?
And a prosecutor.
And a prosecutor.
And a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And a leader.
Because you're providing that support for your team.
That's right.
Your staff. Well, what are some of the, if you will, kind of in that position, what do you need from the prosecutor?
If I understand you correctly, you were talking about administration. That is one part of it. Mm-hmm. However, there's other layers of administration within the office. For example, the clerical staff currently has two very senior, experienced clerical supervisors who manage and supervise the clerical staff. So on a day-to-day basis, the prosecutor doesn't have much to do with how that happens.
Because that's being handled by...
That's being handled by the experts.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Right. The victim witness counselors, they have an administrator as well, someone who's been a victim witness counselor and an administrator for a number of years and knows how to manage the victim witness mm-hmm. counselors, as well as the investigators. There's an investigating supervisor that handles that. And then there's also a first deputy and a second deputy currently in the office. The second deputy was tasked with managing the lower courts, family court and district court, and the first deputy is tasked with supervising circuit court. So as far as administrating in that way, there's plenty of layers of administration that mm-hmm. Should free up the prosecutor to participate in all areas of the job, not just administration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it is a pretty, as you said, layered There's a chain of command, and there's, I guess, support in the right places for you guys to be able to do your job.
Well, there should be if the right people are in the right places.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like for you in your experience? Because you worked with previous county prosecutors.
Yes, I was with the office from 2009 to 2015, and there's definitely some differences, but. Again, it's having the right people in place to assist. And also, one of the things that I spoke of, which is part of my vision, is not only building but maintaining a strong prosecutor's office. That can't happen with the amount of turnover that's happened in both the last two administrations. The current administration has lost 12 deputy prosecutors in the last 3 years, and they started out with 13. So it's almost 100% turnover rate. And there's no way to create an atmosphere of success.
That was a funny sound. I think that was our phone system. Never heard that before. So caller, if you can be patient, we'll get to you very shortly. I wanted to bring in, because we were talking about teams and building teams, you have some other team members with you. Mark, maybe you could share a little bit about why you're supporting Lisa, and maybe, if you will, for listeners who might not know who you are, a little bit about your background and how you're supporting this candidacy.
Okay, sounds good. Well, again, my name is Mark Ozaki. Actually, I think before I go into myself, I think you were getting at maybe Lisa has what qualities does a prosecutor have to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the qualities that you have to have is experience, and you have to be a good leader. So Lisa definitely has good experience. My main job is I'm a lieutenant with the Kauai Police Department, and I work with the more serious cases. It's the felony type of cases, mm-hmm. so we got the serious crimes. And but my background has been with juveniles. I come from a juvenile background. I coordinate the KPAL program. So we got a really big program on the North Shore with the Kilauea basketball program, 300 mm-hmm. kids strong, the senior wow. citizens, thanks to Bill Troutman, you know, from the North Shore helping right. us out, really great guy. But so I've known Lisa for the last 6 years, actually for 7 years now, 6 years on duty at work. And the qualities that I've seen in Lisa is definitely what we need in a prosecutor. The compassion she has for the victims, the work ethic, the drive, and again, my big thing is helping kids, and mm-hmm. I'm really big on that. So my experience has been a lot of times turning over cases that I was the initial investigator that involved children as victims. And like Lisa said, she was, you know, investigating sex assault and major crimes for 6 years. And a lot of those types of crimes were involved kids with sex assaults. And I've seen Lisa in action and how she's handled these cases, and even on a personal level, which I can get into a little later. But just the qualities that I see that is needed to be a successful prosecutor. And it's not somebody that you just want rah, 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 I want to get everybody. You know, Lisa is not like that. She's fair. There's times that she goes into the office and we have a discussion and debate because we think that we need to have things done a certain way. But Lisa is a good communicator. So she, you know, she's able to, you know, we come to a happy medium. And it's what's best for the victim, sometimes even what's best for the suspect.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause,
you know, not everybody needs to be put in jail,
mm-hmm.
but there needs to be justice.
Right. There has to be consequences.
Yes.
There is punishment when there is an offense. I got to ask this question in regards, because and that's one of the things I enjoy about this job, is as I get to learn as I go, is what is the interface between the prosecutor's office and the police department? How does this all work with the judiciary? And thanks for a little civics lesson. I'm going to take this phone call and just check in, but maybe, Mark, you'll address that?
I can do a little
or
bit
both,
of it.
And then I'm going to just take our phone call and see what kind of question we have.
Okay. So, well, there's different aspects. And Lisa, you can jump in at any time, you know, as far as judiciary or law enforcement or public safety. Law enforcement is just one aspect. We a lot of times do the initial investigation. We try and help victims. We try and put together the best report and the best case we can. And we turn that over to the prosecuting attorney's office. So the interaction between the prosecuting attorney's office and the police department should be huge. It should be something that there's no walls. There should be, I mean, we're actually right across the hall from each other. Our main office is right across the hall from the prosecutor's office. So there should be no barriers. We should be able to communicate. We should have a great rapport. We should be able to learn from each other, bounce ideas off of each other, and come up with what is the best plan or plan of action. So, in a nutshell, I think Lisa can go into more of the OPA and the judiciary.
Sure. For justice to occur, the prosecutor has to have as many facts and as much information as possible of any particular case to know what the right thing to do is. And the prosecutor can't get that information just by reading some police reports or thinking it up in their own head. They have to take the time to speak with the police, the people who are on the streets every day, who know the different people involved, know the history. Most of our police officers have lived on Kauai all their lives, so they have a lot of information. And so it's crucial to achieving justice, to spend time actually speaking face-to-face with the police officers. And as Mark said, sometimes there's going to be differences of opinions, and it really isn't helpful to the process of justice for people getting their feet stuck in stone or cement. You really got to sit down and talk to get to the best result and get to the right outcome.
There we go. Thanks for answering that. I've got a follow-up to that, but I want to take this phone call. Caller, are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
You're here. All right. Let me see if I got everyone. You're going to have to put your earphones on. Caller, I'm talking to my guests here who are
there you right go. Now. I'm kind of hearing you through the phone, but I'm going to just be quick and to the point as long as you guys are hearing me.
Okay. Can you hear our caller?
I'm wondering, as prosecutor or potential running for prosecutor, what your opinion is of the cannabis laws, especially with the new dispensaries that are going to be opening up here shortly. And I'm going to hang up and listen to what you got to say. Thanks.
Thanks, caller.
So as far as the prosecutor's job, mm-hmm. it's not really to have opinions about the laws. It's to enforce the laws. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important for the prosecutor to read and understand the laws when enforcing them. And I know that with the new laws creating some legality to cannabis and some illegality, they're kind of complicated, but it is worth, and it's the prosecutor's duty to spend time understanding those laws and assisting the police with understanding those laws so they can appropriately do their job and mm-hmm. arrest people who are violating the law and not arrest people who are not violating the law.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really up to you to decide, oh, that's a kind of illegal, so we're going to kind of file charges. It's like it's illegal and we're going to file charges if there's enough evidence to file those charges. How does that happen?
There's some level of prosecutorial discretion. However, we all have different opinions about all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. And it's our state legislature who enacts the laws that reflects the will of the people or our democracy, so to speak. So an individual prosecutor or police officer or judge shouldn't be imposing their views on the laws. They mm-hmm. should be enforcing the laws mm-hmm. appropriately.
I guess I'm going to ask this question back to my ignorance of how does it work, civics, is when there's a criminal offense, how do you get involved?
Okay, so...
Because you're not a law enforcement officer, correct?
Well... Not a law enforcement. Well, yes, you are. Prosecutors are law enforcement.
Uh-huh.
However, they're not the first responders and they're not the investigators. That's the police department.
Uh-huh.
So the police get a call either through dispatch 911 or some other report, and they go out and they respond to the call.
Those are our first responders.
That's right.
Okay.
And they do an investigation. They can choose to give a call up to our office if they want consultation about how to proceed with a certain thing, or they could also just do their investigation and then they turn their reports in. Their mm-hmm. reports go to their supervisors for approval, and then they go through the records process and are sent to the prosecutor's office for review. So we could be involved in the case early on if we're asked for some guidance or questions from the police, or we could just receive the reports. And then if we need more information, or which we often do, we would communicate back with the police and find out what information else we need to mm-hmm. make our decision on the case.
And this, I guess, in the scenario of a nonviolent offender, you're not going to get involved unless there are charges being made against this nonviolent offender.
So, are you talking back about the cannabis or
any kind of criminal offense that was a nonviolent?
So usually when the police do their investigation, they do send their reports up for review. Unless they unfound the case, then I don't believe it comes up to the prosecutor's office. But there's sometimes that there's a question whether it's a violent or nonviolent.
Uh-huh.
The police may believe they have probable cause, or they may not know if they have. They may not be certain. They'll still complete their investigation and their reports and send it up for review by the prosecutors.
Okay, Lisa, do you mind if we take another phone call?
No, I don't mind.
Caller, you're on the air. Thanks
Aloha.
For calling. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I can barely hear you. Is
okay.
anybody there?
We are here.
Oh, okay. Hi, you're kind of in the distance.
Okay.
I can barely hear you. Hi, my name's Ed Justice.
Hi, Ed Justice.
My wife and I, we live in Hanapepe. We're a business owner out this way. I'm calling to make people aware of a bill that's going up for final vote at the council on Wednesday the 29th. This is Bill 2628. Are you all familiar with that at all?
Not at all. So Bill 27, say that again?
2628.
Okay.
So this is... As the council listed, this is a bill regarding revocable permits for use in county right-of-way. So how this bill has been being presented is that it would give organizations the ability to regulate vendors that set up on county right-of-way, which the county right-of-way means streets, parking stalls, some sidewalks. And so they think that this would give them the ability to regulate vendors during town events, such as Kapaa's first Saturday and mm-hmm. Hanapepe's first Friday night, or mm-hmm. excuse me, just Hanapepe Friday nights. But when you actually read the text of the bill, that's not what it says at all. Basically, what the bill, what the proposed bill allows is any applicant to get permission from the county with no community approval process to set up whatever vendors it would want on the county property in front of any business or property that they want to. And that business or property owner would have no say in what is put in front of their establishment and would have no right to prevent it from happening, even if it were a proven detriment.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
I've actually created a petition against this bill already, and I've taken this up and down the street to the merchants of Hanapepe, and most of the businesses have signed it. The reality is this permit agreement would only be between the applicant and the county. There is nothing in this bill that involves the businesses or the community in the process of approval. You can basically get this permit without anybody's permission except the county. Now, this is a bill that reality does not respect the existing business community.
And do you know who, if you will, is introducing this bill?
According to the bill, it says that it was introduced by Ross Kagawa, and then in parentheses it says by request.
Okay, so he's advancing, I think, a request from maybe the administration?
That's quite possible. I don't know the details on that.
So, Ed, we have Lisa Aaron in the booth. She's running for county prosecutor. Do you see a tie-in with the county prosecutor's office? Is this something that might somehow relate to our interview with her and her candidacy for the office of county prosecutor?
Well, that's a good question. I guess because this is what ultimately about enforcing the laws, right? There's already laws on the books that illegal vendors can't be setting up on county property. And basically, this was kind of unusual, is when I had called the police to report that there was people set up illegally. I was told by the police officer that the county council had said that an organization in town controls Friday night and that they wouldn't come enforce the law, which is confusing to me.
Right. You know? Yeah, well, you kind of want to get to the bottom of it, and not really getting good information can make that more challenging.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Ed, what do you have other information that you'd like to share about Bill 2628?
I do know that the hearing, like I said, it's going to be on Wednesday the 29th, and it's going to be, I think that the hearing starts at 8 a.m. I will definitely be there, and I hope anybody else from the community who is as equally concerned as I am about the potential ramifications, because this doesn't just affect Hanapepe, this affects
Kilauea, right.
Exactly.
Princeville, Kapaa. So, Ed, I'm going to make a suggestion that maybe on Tuesday you might also be able to call in with Felisa's show. That would be the day before the public hearing, and you can generate a little bit more interest as well and support for your petition. Can people sign this petition online, or is it?
I haven't set it up like that yet, but if anyone's interested, I would just suggest that they submit testimony to the council and read the bill for themselves.
There we go. Thanks for that one. Appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to share with us and listeners of Kauai Community Radio?
Not right now. Just wish you guys much success and much success on your run for prosecutor, because having campaigned myself for council, I know how much hard work that actually is.
There we go. Well,
thanks, Ed.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
A good evening.
Aloha. So interesting things, how things get put on the plate of folks who might not even be interested in regulating vendors on a sidewalk in a small town on a rural island in the Pacific.
It's a very interesting issue, is what Ed brought up. There's a lot of concerns, but as far as law enforcement's concerned, unless there's a law to be enforced, it kind of goes along with the first caller, that it's personal opinions aren't really helpful or necessary to enforce the law. So if there is a law on the books, then it should get enforced. And if there's not, then it's not going to.
Mm-hmm. And that's not really your culiana to say you have to enforce these are on the books, you have to enforce that, or is that?
Well, if there is a law in place, I certainly, and that is being violated, and the police aren't aware of it, I would certainly have a discussion with them to recommend that they enforce laws that are valid and on the books.
Mm-hmm. We've got another phone call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And you can hear us?
I can hear you clearly.
Thank you. Question or comment for our guest?
I got a question. I'm holding in front of my hand, it's called from the National Archives and Records Administration. It's dated July 18, 1897. It's signed by the Queen. I have a red ribbon copy from the archives stating that the state of Hawaii, that the Queen has never relinquished her rights, that annexation could never happen. So my question to the Lisa, which I know personally, is, being this red ribbon letter exists, how do we, the public, get information from the prosecutor's office, and how do we get them to prove that Hawaii is an existing government of the United States of America? Where is your letter or your documents that show that you guys are legally here in Hawaii, and that the Queen's protest letter that I'm holding in my hand with the red ribbon, and it's from the archives of Maryland Archives, which where we found it. So being this red ribbon letter exists, an annexation never legally happened, how does the state of Hawaii has their authority to force their laws upon our people, being that 62% of the laws is kingdom laws that they had revised? That's why they call it the Hawaii Revised Statute. So being you come in here and want this job as a prosecutor, we want to know if you're going to protect our inherent sovereign right on the land as a Kanaka Maoli, or you can't do that as a state of Hawaii prosecutor.
There we go. So, Lisa, just taking a deep breath. And, caller, I appreciate you asking, because it's a very complex issue, as you're well aware. And I think you're just going to, if you will, make your best attempt to address the complexity of it.
I will do my best. It is a very complex question, and I think it has multiple parts to it. But if the state of Hawaii isn't really a state because of the issues that occurred, I believe that would be a federal issue that would be resolved in the federal courts, and it wouldn't have to do with the prosecutor, because that would be a separate issue.
And but the prosecutor's office is claiming that they seen enough evidence to prove that Hawaii is part of the United States of America. But because I had this red ribbon letter of that annexation could never happen because of the Queen's protest letter against annexation. Now, anybody who's doing and prosecuting here on the land, they're running maritime laws on the land. I've been to the courts. I've seen the judge change the yellow fringe off the flag in the beginning of our court cases when we started our land battle in Honolulu. So, you know, it's just really not right to allow or not even go and investigate, as if you're going to be a prosecutor, to find out really, is this truthfully? Because if not, then you would be continued the genocide. You would be continuing the genocide that has happened to the Polynesian people. So, you know, we all like get along. We all like understand each other. But we have to meet halfway on the line. We cannot have all the state of Hawaii prosecutors say, no, it has to be like this. But us Polynesian people, we don't carry guns. We're not a threat to society. We are humble, honest people being driven off of our lands. If you look in Hanalei, half of Hanalei, more than half of Hanalei, there's no Polynesians here. I'm one of the few left over here in Hanalei town that living on their land from Kamehameha. Everybody else is getting driven off of the plantation who had all these lands, ceded lands. They, after their lease was done, they sold the lands. So how does these people get the right to sell our lands when the plantation only had on lease? You know, so we get all these big issue problems that Abercrombie thought that he was going to just shove down our throat and say, this is it. You know, America, come to Hawaii and this, you can make millions of dollars, and he says it. But, you know, Lisa, I just like, you know, thank you for your moment, because it's really important to me, because for my children and the sake of our Polynesian people, how can we live on our land if we're being driven off of and forced off of?
So if you know me, then even though I don't have the answer to all your questions, because they involve and bring in so much information that's beyond what I know right now. But if you do know me, you know I respect people. I'm fair, and I'm willing to listen to people's opinions and the information they have.
Yes, and you're right. And I know that you are very respectful, and I thank you for that. But I would love to show you this Red Ribbon letter, because I got it out of the Maryland archives.
I'm happy for you to share any information that you have. Point me to any direction of things that I can learn more about. I'm happy to learn those things and consider those things.
Because everything's based on annexation. Annexation, they all believe annexation really happened. That's why Hawaii is the way it is. But this protest letter stops annexation because of the treaty that she canceled. So thank you for your time. And, yes, I'd like to at least show you this sometime, this document, or even give you a copy later on. But thank you for your time, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, mahalo for calling. It's a very complicated issue. And I know just last week some Hawaiian nationals, activists, went and presented information in Washington, D.C., the Red Ribbon Tour. Hopefully we'll be hearing more about that when Kaiulani returns to the airwaves. Just more information that's being shared in regards to addressing an injustice that happened well before you and I came to Kauai, that's for sure. So I appreciate the caller. We are taking phone calls. I have Lisa Aaron. She is a candidate for the County of Kauai's prosecuting attorney. And we'll get more information from her and her campaign team. I'm going to play just a couple of different, if you will, sound bites on the what is this, the 23rd of June, coming up, a couple of events, and also an announcement that KKCR listens.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Dove presents Manifest 3, Xavier Rudd, Bobby Alou, Shiloh Pa, Sashimon, Root Hub, and more. Sunday, June 26th, at the Church of the Pacific Outdoor Amphitheater. Gates open at noon, show starts at 1 p.m., Xavier Rudd starts at 7 p.m. Tickets at Hanalei Harvest Market, Kilauea Healthy Hut, Papayas, Natural Foods in Kapa'a, Progressive Expressions in Koloa. All ages welcome. More information at dovepresents.com. 635-5556, Manifest 3 with Xavier Rudd from Australia, Sunday, June 26th.
Aloha, KKCR Ohana. Kauai Community Radio is constantly evolving. In January, we will begin the 2016 KKCR Strategic Plan, and you are invited. In a series of public meetings, group discussions, collaborative workshops, and awesome station parties, we will review and rededicate ourselves to the future of Kauai Community Radio. Please get involved in the future of your radio station by emailing strategicplan@kkcr.org, and stay tuned for more updates about the KKCR Strategic Plan, and mahalo for your participation.
That's right. Mahalo for your participation. And thank you for being a member of the KKCR Ohana listening here on a Thursday afternoon. I have Lisa Aaron in the booth. She's joined by Mark Otsaki. Mark, you are campaign manager?
Yes, I am the campaign manager for Lisa Aaron.
Uh-huh. We just heard from a former candidate for council, Ed Justice, who said it's a lot of work, hard work, so thanks for supporting Lisa in her effort. What kind of, if you will, work is involved in a campaign like this?
Well, it's a lot of work, but it's very worth it. Before I go on, though, I got to make sure that I make it clear that I'm a police officer earlier when you asked me about my background, but I have to make sure that I let everybody know that I'm not representing the Kauai Police Department, or any of my views are not reflective in particular of what the department or the chief of police or the Kauai Police Department in general. I cannot speak on behalf of KPD. I can give you some experience maybe if you ask about some situations, but I'm bound by those rules. But I am definitely a SHOPO member.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of the State of Hawaii Police Officers Union, and I can definitely tell you that I can speak on behalf of SHOPO because I'm a member that SHOPO does endorse Lisa Aaron, and the SHOPO made an early endorsement. So and that's huge. I think that says a lot of Lisa, and I think that says a lot of what the opinions might be going around the officers in the police department.
There we go. Well, Mark, thanks for that disclosure. It reminds me, I got to do this.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
So I want to go back to your comment about SHOPO. What is SHOPO? I appreciate my colleague Felicia who asked when the alphabet soup start flying. What is SHOPO and what do they do?
SHOPO is a State of Hawaii Police Officers Union. So that includes not just the Kauai Police Department, but all of the Hawaii Police Departments. So Big Island, Maui Police Department, which includes, Molokai and Lanai, and then the Oahu Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when you give an endorsement, it's not just the Kauai Police Department. So the Kauai Police Department or Kauai SHOPO chair, I should say not the police department, the Kauai SHOPO chair that represents the Kauai officers, they give their recommendations to the state board. And then the state board has to meet and decide if, an endorsement fits within the whole state level mm-hmm. guidelines. So mm-hmm. when you get a SHOPO endorsement, it's not just 170 police officers working for KPD. It's really the thousands of officers throughout the state of Hawaii that represent, county law enforcement.
And why do you think SHOPO endorsed Lisa early on in this campaign?
I think they're excited for a change. I think it's more the hands-on experience that they've seen Lisa in action with. Like for me personally, like I said, I've worked, side by side with Lisa for 6 years, seen the way she does her job, which is, she's a hard worker, she's thorough, but she's very personable and fair, and not just fair to the victims, but actually fair to the, people that may be considered suspects. It's what is good for the whole island of Kauai in general. And me personally, that's what I want. I want a Kauai that is fair. I want harmony. I want everybody to live, pono, and I think that is one of our actually main mission statements is we want to do law enforcement based on the concept of pono.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa definitely, she shines pono. And that's why I want. And I think that's why one of the many reasons that we, as SHOPO members, voted to endorse Lisa Aaron. And I want to stay positive. So mm-hmm. Let's look for the positive reasons.
Well, that's pono.
Yeah.
Staying positive. We have a caller, so I would like to bring that caller on. Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being patient. Appreciate it. I'm running solo, but you are on the air live.
Thank you. I'm glad the officer explained why SHOPO is supporting Lisa. I don't know anything about her personally. I've seen her picture on the outdoor sign. She looks like a kind of a tough cookie, but doesn't mean is not fair and personable. And those, of course, would be very admirable qualities. I'm just wondering, Lisa and her campaign manager, how can you really do your job in a country where we have the highest imprisonment rate in the whole world? We have one-third of the world's prisoners in our jails. 2 million prisoners, I guess, something like that. Most of them are minorities. And, gee, that's got to be a tough job to do. And, you know, all due respect and best wishes to whoever does win. But in the larger context, how do we allow people to have a modicum of freedom when a lot of people just consider this to be somewhat of a police state? I don't mean Hawaii. I mean our whole country. I know it's a big picture issue, but, you know, how can we make the relationship between the authorities and the public more of a two-way street? How can that happen? And I'll hang up and take your answer.
Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate that. And you got that. How do we go forward?
In all seriousness, your question is really a national question, and if I had the answer to that, I would consider running for president. I don't have the answer for that, and I'm not a politician geared to run for president, but I can tell you that I've worked in the criminal justice system both in the state of California and the state of Hawaii, and they're vastly different. And I can tell you the state of Hawaii, not only law enforcement, but the judiciary is very fair-minded, not rushing to judgment, and I think it's as fair as it can be. And so, unfortunately, there are individuals who do things that put and commit crimes that put our most vulnerable people at risk, and they do need to be incarcerated to keep other people safe and to impress upon them that they cannot harm people in that way, because there are important laws, and I'm talking about things like murder, assault, sexual assault. There's not an easy answer to those things. I think that there's a lot of consideration given to other types of crimes and other types of remedies, education, prevention, and things, but ultimately, we do have a fair process here in the state of Hawaii. Our Constitution is quite protective of individual rights. And as a general matter, people who are incarcerated in the state of Hawaii have a fair process that they're able to avail themselves of.
Go ahead.
And Jennifer Antony, she introduced herself earlier. We haven't let her jump in. She has some things to say, so I'd like to have Jennifer say some things now.
Thanks, Jennifer, and thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, I'm a registered nurse, and I've been a nurse on Kauai for 20 years, and I've worked with Lisa for 6. And the last caller made me think of something, although his issue is so, you know, widespread and goes very high up to federal levels and whatnot. But thinking about, as you said, Jimmy, how do we go forward? I know that working on our little island here, and I am contracted to work with victims of sexual assault. So when there's an assault regarding children or adults, I will get called in to work with the victim to do a medical assessment and to treat them and to collect forensic evidence if needed. We can talk about that if anybody wants to later. However, my point that I wanted to say is that if we are not all working together between the Office of the Prosecuting Attorney's Office and the investigative law enforcement agencies, the advocacy agencies, and the other agencies that get brought in when we do have crimes. If we are not working as a cohesive team, nothing is going to be fair in the trickle-down process. So we have to all have our transparency and all be getting along and be available to each other. And my experience with Lisa, because I also have worked with the last two prosecutors as well and had it my own experiences. And my own experience is that having someone like Lisa with her work ethic at our helm, we will be that cohesive team that the island needs to move forward.
Well said. Go ahead.
And, you know, I want to thank that caller, too. And it is a big, and it seems like a national problem. But for me personally, and I spoke to Lisa about this, you know, in our personal conversations, and we're on the same page. But I think if we got to, it is a big problem and a national problem. But if we don't start small and fix it locally, it cannot emanate and build that snowball effect and go bigger and bigger. So we got to start somewhere. So I think we're on the right track here. If, like Jennifer said, it's partnership. And my thing about how we can serve the community better is three P's. It's prevention, partnership, and problem solving. Prevention. We stop the doggone thing from happening in the first place, which is getting out there, educating our kids, giving our kids things to do, put them on the right track. And hopefully that'll minimize the crimes from happening or becoming criminal, career criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Partnership, like Jennifer said, is all agencies have to work together. If we're not on the same page, there's going to be a breakdown, and we cannot solve crime or prevent crime or help victims if we don't have partnership and prevention, problem solving. And the only way to do that is to use the community. We have to have the community involved. There's 170 or so police officers, maybe 150 because we're not fully staffed. There's 150 officers, and we cannot prevent crime by ourselves. Not with 70, 80,000 people on this beautiful island of Kauai. We need the community to help us solve and prevent crimes. There's a rash of burglaries going on in Kilauea. We can't do it if we don't have the cat team out there. Mm-hmm. The citizens are thieves. We communicate with them. It's communication. It's being willing to listen. It's being willing to partnership with people, and then we can prevent crimes. And that's my take. And I've spoken to Lisa and Jennifer. We sit on several committees together. It's like speaking to the choir here, you know, when we always talk about the same things. But, you know, I just wanted to get that out there. So, and we got to start here. We got to start locally. And if we can do it here on this little island, other peoples will look at us and use us as an example. And we'll be the flagship. Mm. And hopefully the whole nation will be changing in the future.
There's that potential, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah. We are at the top of the hour. I want to let listeners know that you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. That's up here on the beautiful north shore of Kauai in the middle of the Pacific. 90.9 FM Hanalei, 91.9 island-wide, and 92.7 in the Anahola Moloa'a area. And on the gathering place of Oahu, 104.7. And 95.1 on the cable dial. KAQA Kilauea, KKCR Hanalei, K224CQ in Anahola, and K284AL in Haleiwa. I want to let folks know that this out-of-the-box program is made possible by the good folks at, and we get them up, Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, and Kauai Compassionate Care.
Neil Norman represents buyers and sellers of properties throughout the Hawaiian Islands. Neil is grateful for Hawaii's continued embrace, supports organic farming, beekeeping, and sustainable agriculture, and stands with KKCR on its mission to provide a much-needed voice and forum for Hawaii's diversity of cultures. Mahalo.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808 854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
There we go, and thank you for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I do have a phone call waiting there to be answered, so we'll get to that. I got to do this as well, so hold on, everyone.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Whoo, so we're going to take a phone call right away. Here we go. Caller, are you still there?
Yes.
All right, caller, you are on the air with candidate for County Prosecutor Lisa Aaron.
Hi, Lisa. Good luck on your run for office or whatever. I wish all the candidates good luck. But there's a lot of people that think abortion is like a capital offense. It's like murder. I mean, there's people just, you know, down the street at the church I sometimes go to that think that it's murder. You know, so I'm wondering, you know, if they made abortion a capital offense, would you be willing to charge people for murder? And then one other thing, when I'm 64 years old, can you still hear me?
Yes.
When I'm 64 years old, I'm an advocate for the legalization of marijuana, and I don't smoke marijuana, you know, but I did when I was a kid. And then when I was in ninth grade, the biggest lesson that we all learned where I lived in Palo Alto, California, is there was this kid who was looking, he was going to go to Monterey for a vacation, a weekend trip, you know, with his family. And he was asking around, hey, do you know where I can find some marijuana? You know, and he couldn't find any marijuana, okay? And so naturally, like a lot of kids, he's going to want to get high. He's too young, he's a minor, he can't get alcohol. And so what he does is he buys an inhalant, like an aerosol. And we all remember the story about this kid. His name was Dave Warnock. He's only like 13 years old, right? 14 years old. And he did this inhalant, and the way the story was is that he ran about 100 feet and died of a massive heart attack. And I swear to God, every single one of us that were in that class, or I'm the class of 69, you know, every single one of us, I know that we're all for the legalization of marijuana. Every single one of us, because we all remember it was our biggest lesson that we learned, you know, from reading and writing in arithmetic in the ninth grade that, you know, if Dave had been able to smoke a joint down at the beach in Monterey, Carmel, California, he wouldn't have died of an aerosol, you know. And when the war in Vietnam, when the war in Iraq started, they showed this one clip of all the little kids, all these little kids sniffing glue on the corners of the streets of Baghdad. It blows my mind, and I'll let you go. And like I say, good luck, you know. And if you win, I hope you bring all your good graces to the table, because I agree with that man who says that there's so many people in prison. You know, one way to reduce the prison population, at least to drop in the bucket, is to legalize marijuana. And have a nice day, and thank you for your time. Bye bye.
Right on. Well, thanks for that call. Lisa, do you want to address some of those issues he brings up?
So, first of all, on the issue of abortion, the state would not be able to legally make that a capital offense or any offense currently. That would be an unconstitutional law. So, no, it wouldn't be prosecuting that law. It would be unconstitutional. On the marijuana issue, I think the things you were talking about children utilizing substances and wanting to get high is a whole different issue than legalizing marijuana. It's more of an issue of how do we raise our children to want more healthy lifestyles and healthy things to do, such as sports, music, the arts, and things. Substances affect children so much differently than it affects adults, because of the way their bodies are still developing and their brains developing, that even if marijuana were legalized, it still wouldn't be legal for children. I would think that any legislature that decided to do that would at least pattern alcohol laws, because alcohol is a legal substance. So I think the bigger issue is, what are we doing for our children to make them grow up healthy and substance-free so they can realize their dreams and accentuate their strengths and their skills, whether they be college-bound to become doctors or they're artists or musicians.
I got another phone call here. Caller, you are on the air with Lisa Aaron, candidate for county prosecutor.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I just have a question for Lisa. It's kind of as a follow-up for what Uncle Lico was asking about Kanakamoli rights, but this is, and the answer to that rightfully was that it's complicated and goes higher than the county level. There are a few things that are entirely within the jurisdiction of the prosecutor's office, and that is traditional access rights for Ahupua tenants. And as you know, that has been adjudicated many times, most recently in the Kuipalama case. So my question is, would you, if you were elected as prosecutor, would you kind of inform or somehow or have a meeting with the police department to explain Native tenant rights to access undeveloped lands so that when the policemen show up upon call of a landowner, those tenants' state and county constitutional rights are protected and not just the landowners. So, because right now, those people's constitutional rights are being suppressed because the police department doesn't understand their rights. They only recognize the landowner's rights. So would you educate the police department so that those people's rights aren't subjugated?
So that is a very important issue that you bring up. And yes, so these types of things come up when there's a criminal trespass complaint being made. And you also pointed out there's two people's rights, because someone who owns property has certain rights of property ownership, which are fundamental as well. And there's also competing constitutional rights. And the Supreme Court, not only in the Kuipalama case, but the cases that came before, have expressed a very clear test when considering the balancing of those rights. And yes, it would be like any other issue. It would be the prosecutor's job to assist the police in understanding what information they need in deciding to make an arrest or not make an arrest. And clearly the police are not lawyers, so it is incumbent on the prosecutor to assist them with understanding the current state of the law so that they can appropriately do their job.
Okay, so that didn't quite address it, because the issue now is that it's a case-by-case issue. But if let's say Hiram Pia needs to go Mauka to collect medicinal limu for a condition he has, right, he can't wait for the prosecutor's office to make a determination as to whether he can access traditional medicine.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry.
It has to be understood at the level of each officer.
What I'm saying is each officer needs to understand the law and the way the law should be enforced, because that's what they're doing. They're enforcing the law or gathering information to see if a law has been broken. For example, the criminal trespassing law. So it wouldn't be necessarily them calling every single time there's a situation. It would be educating them on the factors that they're to consider and the facts that they need to know before they can decide whether they should make an arrest or to not make an arrest, should there be a complaint that comes in. So they need assistance in understanding the current state of the law.
That would be great. So I appreciate your understanding and recognition of that and support of that education. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. I'm going to go to the next caller. Caller, you are on the air live.
Hey, I just want to... Hello?
Hello.
I just want a quick rebuttal. Are you running for a district attorney or family counseling? Because you could say, you know, if your little kid, your child smokes marijuana, then maybe the parents should go to jail. I don't know. I don't know where that case could be made, you know, because it's like the kids are going to do what they will. It's not about being a creative, productive person of society, because there's millions and millions of people that are out there that are successful businessmen, lawyers, judges, et cetera, that smoked pot when they were minors. Because pot's been around on force since the 60s, the early 60s. And like I said, I'm 64. I'm not advocating substance abuse or anything like that, but you just can't stop it. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. And the point is, and sorry for talking, and I'll let you go, is that people, you know, how about a guy like Bob Marley? You know, poor guy's dead now. The guy smoked marijuana every day. And I'm not advocating this. I'm not saying whether I think it's good or bad. But boy, that guy was a prolific songwriter. He was a hero in the third world. I mean, if Bob Marley was alive today, I mean, he's way more famous than any DA in the United States, including, you know, I mean, and you can't say even it's pretty well known fact that Steve Jobs and Apple, you know, those guys smoke pot, you know. Anyways, have a nice day.
Thank you for being brief with that one. And I don't think you were advocating for throwing the family in jail if their child was caught smoking marijuana. I don't think that's what you were inferring. Or
not at all.
No.
I'm
no.
saying that we should do all we can to help our children grow up healthy and productive in a way that makes them happy for their life.
So let's look at some other models. Restorative justice. What I've heard that before. What does that mean?
So I think the way that I've seen it used is a way to get people invested in themselves and their community by having them perform certain acts such as community service to help them learn and have more empathy for the harm they may have caused, mm-hmm. and assist them in rehabilitating in that way rather than a jail consequence or fines or things like that.
And what are some of the models out there, or what are we doing now that are alternatives to incarceration that don't burden the prison system more or the court system more for, like you said, Mark, earlier, that not everybody has to go to jail to learn or to suffer consequences for poor decisions or criminal offense?
Well, I think our juvenile family court judge right now is very fair, and I think they have their own program that they're trying to start, and it's really it starts when they're juveniles, and it's incarceration is the last final ultimate worst possible decision that they can make. They're going to mm-hmm. try everything they can, mm-hmm. and, you know, and unfortunately in Hawaii, and especially in Kauai, some of our restorative types of resources or options aren't really. There's not that much out
there. Somewhat limited.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. know, so, but that doesn't mean we can't work on it. Somebody with an open mind that's willing to work on it can make a difference. I know that I read up on the Rhode Island Police Department, and I went to several trainings, and that's where I got that 3 P's of law enforcement, and I really believe in something like that. And they're using their community, they're using their advocates, they're using resources that's in the community to help prevent crime. And we just need to get, if we get the community involved more, we'll have more places that we can send people to community service, mm-hmm. willing to help and give people that have been convicted of a crime an opportunity to have a job that is actually they can actually earn a decent living off of. If you have an astronomical amount of traffic violations and citations that you can never pay back, you can never get your driver's license back. So there's programs out there, and there's programs like on the Maui Police Department where they have the POI program, where they take the actual officers that work in the schools and they work with the prosecuting attorney's office, and they give kids options and try to teach them life skills. And there's much more that we can do, but I can't think of anything that we're leading in a nation of, as far as
the support. I was just going to ask your office, if you were elected the county prosecutor, what type of influence could you have in regards to the implementation of recommended program, a diversion program, or what type of opportunity would you have potential to develop different models that would address the issue of, youth crime, recidivism, the lack of support in the family structure that would hopefully get these kids out of that path for crime and more on a path for whether it's a career or a college future?
So there's a lot of groups led by the family court judge and other treatment-type providers that meet to come up with ideas, to brainstorm, and to try and promote, if you will, programs that could reach our youth. So as the prosecutor, we're the enforcement agency. We actually couldn't have our own program, but we can certainly participate in the conversation, be current up on the research and learning what's happening in other places that works, and definitely being part of the discussion and the process. There's thankfully very few juveniles that actually go to some sort of detention or incarceration from Kauai, and it's reserved for minors who are doing things, very serious matters, and they're treated more stringently, but there's very few of those. Most of the minors are committing more minor type offenses. And
truancy, some break-ins.
Like property damage, uh-huh. Stealing each other's iPhones.
Terroristic threatening.
Yeah, saying things to other students. There's fights that occur where maybe there's an assault. Thankfully, most of the levels of these offenses are misdemeanor type offenses, and they're dealt with either in juvenile court, or if it's a first time, there's a wonderful teen court process that it helps a lot of kids that really recognize and be part of a peer process that helps them learn from that experience. So there's a lot of good programs going on with kids. So, and there's a lot of motivation by our current family court judge to keep moving forward in that direction to help our children, so which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. There's other programs too. I mean, so like Lisa said, the teen court with Hale Opio. There's Hale Kipa, that is like a diversion program. There's girls court. There's drug court. And a lot of these organizations, if they had the proper funding, they could expand their services even more. So it's the whole community has to believe in this type of restorative or prevention programs. And Hale Opio can grow tenfold. Hale Kipa could grow tenfold. Girls Court could grow tenfold. I mean, it's just the options and the resources. We need the resources. Mm-hmm. That we need.
Now, not too long ago when I first moved here, there was in the mayor's office, the Office of Youth Services. We had a county personnel that was, I think, part of either Parks and Rec or I'm not sure what the other department it might have been, but kind of helped coordinate youth activities for Parks and Rec, Boys and Girls Club, working with Family Court, KPD. That was before KPOW, I think. KPOW would be one of those alternatives or a diversion type program. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say a diversion program because it's really just providing after school or some type of extracurricular activities for our youth. What are some of the other issues? Say you're 19 years old and you're now an adult and you chose poorly in high school and you didn't graduate. What type of through the court system is there for an offender to help make the change so they can get out of that cycle of crime if they could? Well, are there any programs available for adult offenders to change their ways?
So if someone is an adult, like a 19-year-old would be considered an adult, and they've committed a crime that has landed them in legal troubles, if it's something that is probationable, that oftentimes someone that is young, if they've committed something that is not serious, they should have the opportunity at probation. And probation offers a variety of services to try and help the needs of the individual. So, for example, they would direct the person to either seek or and maintain full-time employment or schooling, depending on what their needs are. They would also refer them to any type of therapeutic or counseling services or drug treatment services. So probation does evaluate each probationer individually to try and address their needs to assist them in turning their path around into a more positive direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, while we were listening to some of the underwriters and station identification, top of the hour stuff, I asked you to think about what are some of the issues you see for us on Kauai that your office could help kind of deal with. What are some of those, whether it's repeat offenders or domestic violence or drugs and alcohol? I don't know. What do you see or from your experience? What are some of those areas that need to be addressed, and how could you do that?
Well, I think that, first of all, there needs to be a much better delineation between people in need of assistance and people in need of incarceration. Mm-hmm. And the people that are committing more serious crimes, say, for example, someone who is selling drugs to people should be treated very differently in the criminal system than someone who is using or just possessing small amounts of drugs, mm-hmm. An addict type of person or a mm-hmm. user. And I don't see that there's quite a big delineation between those two individuals currently. And I think it's important. There's an example. There's a person who named Travis Iwamoto who had 15 grams of methamphetamine and firearms when he was arrested. He was released, I believe, fled to the mainland, Georgia, and we extradited him back here only to give him a probation deal and a year in jail. Not someone with firearms and 15 grams of methamphetamine. That is not user amount. That's seller amounts. That person is was harming our community, intending to sell those drugs to addicts, maybe other vulnerable people. That person should be, he should have been, he was facing an A felony. He was facing 20 years in prison. So a probation offer and a year in jail is woefully inadequate. Conversely, we see people who are users of drugs getting the same sentence, or maybe drug court, other types of rehabilitation programs, we should be spending our energy assisting that person, not who's harming themselves, rather than assisting someone who's harming our community.
Right, right. I've got a phone call here. We're going to take this call. I also want to let folks know that in Kilauea, tomorrow, Tropicare will be at the Kilauea School from Friday and Saturday all day long. Tropicare is the, if you will, free socialized medicine that is available, complements of the United States federal government. Caller, you are on the air? Uh-oh, maybe not. Aloha caller.
From 9 to 5 and Saturday from 9 to 5.
Sister, if you could repeat yourself, I didn't have you potted up, so if you could let folks know.
Okay, so Tropicare is free for everybody and anybody, children and adults, and it's on Friday and Saturday from 9 to 5. They do dental, they do extractions and fillings, eye care and general medical assessment. So it's a wonderful thing, and they did not advertise it along with the Ellie and other places, so it's there are no lines, and go there and take advantage of the free, wonderful services. And the other thing I was calling about, you were just talking, Lisa, about the delineation between users and dealers, and I think it is such an important issue because we've got, I live in Kilauea, and there's a dealer in Kilauea now that has gone below the radar for years. Many people know about her, and I'm wondering how serious you are about going after folks like that. And I know that there's an anonymous tip line, but I just wonder how good that is. And I'm wondering if you do come into office, if you're going to go after the dealers. Because if we don't have dealers to deal to the users, then the users have nowhere to go to get it, and we're going to drop the crime.
I agree with you, and I think that it is important to go after the dealers. They're hurting our whole community. They're not just hurting the people whose lives they're ruining by supplying harmful drugs to people. So, yes, I take that very seriously. I'm all for assisting users and helping them on their path to recovery. I think that is essential to our safety and our community. But the people who are making sure the drugs are available to the other people are serious offenders, and they should go to prison.
Absolutely. So there's another woman that did get caught. She got caught with, I don't know the amount of methamphetamine, but she also had firearms in her truck at the time. She got sentenced to 10 years, the maximum, for what she was, given. And that was a year and a half ago. And I've just heard now that she's already a year and a half into her 10-year sentence in a halfway house on the mainland somewhere, and is shortly going to be coming back to Hawaii. How can that happen when, and if you think about it, we've got some users that are still in jail and going round and round and round because they can't do their probationary, they can't do compliance with the probation. So they keep going back. They're caught in the system for years. But this woman that was the North Shore supplier of meth got 10 years, and because of good time, she's going to be back here doing the same thing within 2 years.
So the way that it works in the state of Hawaii, if someone's given a 10-year sentence, it's up to the paroling authority, excuse me, to set her minimum term. And there's a hearing on that. And if the prosecutor's interested, which they should be in a serious case like that, they'll show up to the paroling authority, because the prosecutor is the only one who's going to provide the information to the paroling authority of the devastation that that individual has wreaked on the community. And so it's really important to follow through as the prosecutor to make sure that that doesn't happen.
That was my question, and it was Prosecutor Kohler that prosecuted that case, and I'm wondering, is it off his radar now, and would it be a consideration to have some individuals and Kohler and maybe even you to take that case up and go, wait a minute, this is what she did, this is how much time. Talk to the parole board and say, you know, we don't want her out yet. I don't want her back on, you know, I don't want her back here. And I want this heroin addict that lives within 3 blocks of my house here in Kilauea to go away too, you know. It's just not good. So Would it make a difference for all of us to write letters about that gal that's going to get out?
You can, however, really, once it's set, the minimum term is set by the paroling authority, it's it's impossible to change that. That's why the prosecutor on these serious cases should be following through. I don't know if this happened or not, but should be following through and personally appearing on important cases like that. I know in my cases when I prosecuted here, I would go personally before the paroling authority and ensure they had all the information and know specifically the minimum term that I was seeking in the case and why. So that they,
right.
And I don't know if that was done or not.
Okay.
But 1 year sounds a little low for someone who has firearms and is selling drugs. Yeah.
10 years is low?
No. Doing 1 year out of 10 years is low for someone in that situation.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear that she was already in a halfway house. It's just unbelievable. So I'm hoping that if you come into terms that you will do a better job in keeping those folks that should, you know, be out of our communities, out of our communities.
I definitely will, and it wouldn't be for lack of the paroling authority having the proper information and advocating
right.
for the safety of our community.
Yeah, I think it's so important. Well, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. And we're going to take another phone call right here. Aloha, caller. You are on the air live with Lisa Aaron, candidate for county prosecutor.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, you're there. I have no question for Lisa, but you used a word, and I went to my dictionary to look it up, recidivism.
Easier said than done, but good job.
Okay, thank you very much. Aloha.
Recidivism. What does it mean, Lisa? Why is it important for if you will, folks in the judiciary and law enforcement to address the issue of recidivism?
Well, if someone commits a crime and they don't ever commit a crime again, then the system's done its job, the person's done its job, and the community is safe from that person. However, that's not always the case. So the measures we use, we talked about probation and trying to help people with services. Some people don't want help or refuse to change their behavior that makes our community unsafe. So it's important to note when there is recidivism, someone who's repeat offending, that they are a big danger to our community because people make mistakes. And most of us here in Hawaii, Kauai, are willing to allow someone to grow and learn from their mistakes. But a mistake is a one-time thing and an inadvertent thing. Someone who recidivates is obviously making a conscious decision to engage in criminal behavior, and they're making our community unsafe, so they need to be dealt with very seriously.
So we have, if you will, a disregard for their own safety or the safety of others or observing...
The rights of others.
Right. There we go. I have another phone call. We're going to take this person on the air. You are live with County Prosecutor Candidate Lisa Aaron.
Hi. Can you hear me? This is Gordon LeBedz.
Gordon LeBedz, you have an event that's happening tomorrow. Am I right?
No, I have an event that's happening tonight.
Tonight.
That's why I'm calling and interrupting your
gig. Well, thanks.
Gig.
Share that information.
I just want to tell everybody that this weekend, the Oceans for Peace Coalition, that's educating the public around RIMPAC, the war games that are about to take place in, next week and all through July and the first week of August, with 27 different navies coming to Hawaii to blow things up and blast sonar and just terrorize the ocean. Anyway, we have a movie that I think is quite important. Tonight at the Kaloa Center, in a half an hour at 6 o'clock, the Kaloa Neighborhood Center, we're showing the film Sonic Sea, and it's about Navy sonar and noise in the ocean. Also, it'll be shown again tomorrow at the Kapa'a Library at 7 o'clock. And then again in Princeville at the Community Center in Princeville on Sunday, at 7 o'clock,
and that's Sonic
Sea.
Yeah, we have tomorrow No, tonight. We'll start with tonight, right? I'm trying to find it on. I just had it there, Gordon.
Tonight at 6.
In Koloa.
Right.
At the neighborhood center. And then you're going to lead a discussion after that?
Yeah. Yeah, we're just going to talk about Navy sonar and RIMPAC and the impacts of RIMPAC. But we're, you know, one of the biggest impact is the amount of sonar they're going to be blasting all around Hawaii. And that's why this movie Sonic Sea is so important.
And that movie Sonic Sea will be shown in Kapa'a at the Kapa'a Library on the 24th, which is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
That's at 7 p.m.
7
p.m. And then for folks who are missing out and are up on the North Shore, you can catch that same movie, Sonic Sea, on the 26th, which is Sunday night at 6 p.m. up in the Princeville Neighborhood Center.
Yes, indeed. Thanks.
And okay. So you guys are going to be doing a series of films. The Oceans for Peace Coalition will be also showing Why We Fight later on in the month, or I guess would be early in July.
Right. We've got actually a whole program. It's a really lively group. We're showing a couple of movies, Why We Fight, Oceans. We've got a letter writing campaign, sign waving campaigns. It's been quite an enthusiastic group.
And trying to just raise the awareness about the impact of RIMPAC and the effects in our marine environment.
Yes, indeed.
Well, thanks, Gordon. Appreciate you calling
us. Thank you.
See you in Koloa tonight.
I'll let you get back to talking about the drug war.
There we go. Aloha. Okay. I'm Gordon Labetz from Surfrider Kauai and part of the Oceans for Peace Coalition. They have some events going on this weekend. Tonight, the movie Sonic Seas in Koloa. Tomorrow in Kapa'a at 7 at the Neighborhood Center. Tomorrow will be at the library. Tonight is at the Neighborhood Center in Koloa, the Kapa'a Library on Friday, and then on Sunday at the Princeville Neighborhood Center. You can go to islandbreath.blogspot.com for more information about that, or go to their website, Oceans for Peace Coalition, and get more information about their activities. We are joined in the booth by Lisa Aaron. She is, you are an attorney. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
You are an attorney.
It's one of the requirements.
There we go. And you're running for county prosecutor. For folks who are just joining us, we've got about 20 more minutes of conversation with our candidate. We'll make the same space available for your, competitor, the incumbent, Justin Kohler. Sometime he might come on a Thursday Out of the Box or a Tuesday Kauai Soapbox with Felicia Cowden. Lisa, thanks for joining us. You brought a couple of supporters, campaign manager Mark Osaki. Jennifer, you're a nurse. You guys were talking a little bit about the teamwork or the safety net that's out there when you guys are doing an investigation. What does that partnership look like now? Or what would you like to see more of? What would be effective for us to have in the future to continue to get evidence, to provide support to victims, as well as execute some of those warrants and the prosecution of offenders?
Sure. I can only speak from the role that I am involved with, so I'll start with that end. So I'm the medical component of the team. I'm not an advocate. I'm not law enforcement. I'm not legal. I'm medical.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts, sir. So that's my role, is to work with my patients, with the victims. And regarding that, I'm sort of the bridge. The forensic nurse is really the bridge between law enforcement and the prosecutors, the legal aspect of a case. I work from a completely non-judgmental, non-biased place, as I do when I'm working my regular nursing job in the community. I do not take sides. I just collect my medical assessments. However, without prudent communication, cases wouldn't go forward. There's been quite a few times the last couple years when Lisa was our primary sexual assault prosecutor, who she would handle all of our cases. And there were times when there were issues of an unconscious patient or a minor. And, you know, I don't know all the laws. That's not for me to know. And I know what my job is, but I also need to have the awareness of what her job is and what law enforcement's job is. And we all work within our boundaries, but we all have to communicate our roles to each other and share that information. And Lisa's always been 100% available where, you know, I'll call her or text her at 2 a.m. saying, hey, I've got this case. You know, it's this minor and this is that and this is the other. And, you know, what can I do? Where can I go? How much can we do with this? Because we need that guidance. Law enforcement and my role, you know what we do, but to have the prosecutor available to you and in that heat of the moment when you're making life and death decisions on behalf of victims is crucial. And she's always really been there. And again, this is only from my very, very tiny part of this giant puzzle. But I know that she's there in all aspects for other types of crimes as well, not just what, how, you know, our capacity. I don't know, Mark, you have anything you want to chime in on that one?
No, I think you said, it's about collaboration, partnership, and communication. So we had that with Lisa, and we want to get that
We want
back.
It back. We need it back. The community needs it back.
Consistency, too. We need consistency.
Yeah. And I'm just going to ask the if you will, the incumbent, Justin Kohler. This is his first, if you will, time as the county prosecutor. It's a four-year term? It's a four-year term. And so he's at the end of his four-year term, and now he's running for re-election. I think I looked at an article that was in the Garden Island, and I believe I posted it on Facebook. In there was a quote, Lisa, that I think it was, for me, it was kind of a telling statement in regards to a little bit what's driving the decision for you to be engaged in a campaign to become the county prosecutor. The article said, I never really wanted to run for prosecutor, but after being with the office for 6 years, it became apparent to me that unless I stepped up and made the office a better place, that no one was going to do that. You'll go on to say in the article, I didn't see that anyone else was willing to do it. I believe I have the experience and the ability to not only handle the cases, but to make the office better by guiding the less experienced attorneys to make the office stronger. Lisa, what was it like working there, and what were some of the things that you felt weren't being done that need to be done, or that if you were elected would get done?
Right. So that statement was in the Garden Island. Thank you. It is accurate. And so what would happen was when you're a deputy prosecutor, you have your own caseload and you can handle your caseload and do a good job, but it doesn't affect the entire office because you're only one person and you're not the supervisor over the people. You're not setting policies. You're not making those decisions except for the decisions on your case. So what I was seeing happen is some plea bargaining that was occurring and the way cases were being handled by lesser experienced people. I would bring to the attention of the current prosecutor, and there would be assurances that things would change and it shouldn't be that way, and there was no change. And so after about 2.5 years of trying to be a positive participant in making the office better and seeing that it was really, really not having any impact or change, a very, very tragic case happened. In about February of 2015, the owner of Kapa'a Wine and Liquor Store in Kapa'a, a 71-year-old man, Mr. Kuboyama, was robbed by an individual who hit him with a metal rod and shoved him into a metal freezer, thankfully resulting only in staples and some other serious but not life-threatening injuries. The conduct that the perpetrator inflicted on him could have caused Mr. Kuboyama to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I received that case to prosecute. And it was a robbery. He also stole the money out of the till and ran. And when I was looking at the history of this person,
Kavika Manaku. I learned that this wasn't the first time he'd been in trouble with the law. In fact, at the time that he did this to Mr. Kubayama, he was on probation for 2 counts of burglary in the second degree, where he had served a 1-year jail term, which made me investigate that case to see what Manaku was all about. And in that case, he had actually burglarized 2 hotel rooms where people were staying. So those are actually called residential burglaries, or burglaries in the first degree, that were reduced to lower offenses, to Class C felonies. Manaku should have gotten 10 years in prison at the very least. He could have gotten 20 years in prison on that burglary case, but instead he was given a probation deal and a year in jail, which would be something you might do for a young person who has no prior criminal history, but that wasn't the case with Manaku. In fact, Manaku had, when he committed those burglaries, had just been out of prison on a 5-year prison term for about 8 months. He was not a person that should have gotten a deal like that. And when I questioned the current prosecutor about that deal that was made, I was told that it was because it would be too difficult to bring back mainland witnesses. And, you know, unfortunately, it is difficult, but that's part of our job. And our job is to prosecute cases, especially when you can see someone's behavior escalating like we did. Thankfully, Mr. Kubayama was not more seriously injured, but anyone who drives through Kapa'a Town knows Kapa'a Liquor Store is no more. He closed. He didn't want to be a vulnerable person to this and end his life mm-hmm. that way after he'd been part of the community for so long. So it had a severe emotional impact on one of our kapuna.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, in my handling of the robbery case, I was able to achieve a 25-year prison sentence on Kavika Manaku, but it shouldn't have even had to happen. And I have to say, on the other side, not only did we not protect Mr. Kubayama by that plea bargain that shouldn't have happened that way, but I don't think we did Kavika Manaku any favors thinking he could get away with stuff. Maybe none of that would have happened had he got a more significant prison term. Maybe that would have been the thing that turned the light bulb on for him.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a complete failure and wasn't acceptable. And at that point, I really realized things weren't going to change unless I changed them myself.
Mm-hmm. And you're listening to Lisa Aaron. She is running for the Kauai County prosecuting attorney. Lisa, you will be the first election that Kauai voters will have. It will be at the primary, but you're moving on. This is a nonpartisan office, right? You don't have to worry about the primary. You're just going to go to the general election with your opponent. Is that correct?
So the primary in Kauai only serves to eliminate a candidate in our race if there's more than 2. So yes, we both would go on to the general election.
Uh-huh. We've got a phone call. Caller, sorry for hanging up earlier. Thanks for your patience. You're live on the air.
Hey, how's it?
Good.
I just wanted to call in and say I was listening to that story about Kapa Liquor. And, you know, I know both of those individuals. I knew that boy when he was young. I know his dad. And I know, obviously, Kapa Liquor goes way back. And, you know, it really was a hard story to listen to, because the reality is that had he gotten a stiffer sentence, you know, maybe that wouldn't have occurred.
Mm.
And, you know, my mom works right around the corner and was working that day, although she probably would have clubbed him. yeah, she raised me, so she's tough. But, and she knows that boy, too. And, you know, the thing about it is just hearing that was kind of visceral just now. And it had to make me call him.
Mm.
So I just wanted to say, good job. You know, maybe, and that boy might not actually be playing with a full deck, so he might need some help while he's incarcerated. And as far as the you know, the
Recidivism.
I'm
recidivism, yes, thank you. You know, I was listening to some of the testimonies from our current prosecutor in county council meetings on these very issues. And the other thing I'll point out is that I'm kind of strict on my standards for what department heads should be prepared to testify in front of county council. And I wasn't impressed that he didn't have all the files. And, you know, and I did support him last election. You know, I even had held signs a couple times, so I was kind of bummed on that one. But then to hear this story, not so good for him. Anyway, thank you.
Well,
I'm
thank you.
Glad you're on him. Aloha. Bye.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Any comments you'd like to address? And we are just down to the last 10 minutes of our show. We've had Lisa Aaron joined by Mark Osaki and Jennifer. I didn't catch your last name.
It's Anthony.
Anthony. I did catch it now that you mentioned it. Thanks, Jennifer. Lisa, what do you think in regards to the caller's comment in regards to support for the incumbent and, if you will, maybe a shift and a desire to consider you as a good option for Kauai County prosecutor?
Well, I think that every election, people should take a look at both candidates and not really make a decision until they've seen who's more qualified and who's the person that they believe will serve our community better. I don't think that incumbents should get a free pass. If I'm elected and after my term is coming towards the end, I don't think I should get a free pass. I think the people should know what's happened during my term of office. Have I been successful? Have I assisted making a stable and strong prosecutor's office like I've talked about? And am I doing a good job? I don't think that any incumbent should get a free pass. The prosecutor and any other elected official in this county serves the people, and the people have the right to have the best person possible for each job.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Some head nodding going on there in agreement with that. I'm going to do, let's see, maybe some final statements because we are running out of time. And I do appreciate that you were able to stay a little bit longer because I know that we talked initially we'd have an hour. Some of the questions or phone calls went a little bit long. So thanks for staying a little bit longer and adding your perspective to the conversation.
It's an honor. And it's an honor and privilege to be here so the whole community can know and get to know Lisa Aaron the way we, in a small version of the way we do. I do have a closing statement, but before I do my closing statement, the gentleman that called maybe three or four calls earlier, he said, oh, I seen her picture and she looks kind of tough, so he's glad that she has a heart, you know, but she does look tough because she's actually a former athlete or still an athlete. Little fun fact about Lisa Aaron is she was on the 1987 women's United States of America women's softball team, and she has a gold medal with the Pan Am game. So
right on.
She knows how to work hard. She's an athlete, you know. So I have an athletic background, so I can appreciate somebody that can get to that level, because you don't get there by cruising and just getting by. You got to work hard. So I know Lisa Aaron knows how to work hard, but this is a fun fact out there.
Gold medal winner.
But one of the first callers asked, we talked about if this is an election, is it common, or is it somebody that gets appointed, or is it a job interview? If this were a district that we just turned in our resumes and we had to sit in a job description, sit in a job interview, and the mayor would be the one that would decide who would be the prosecuting attorney, it would be hands down Lisa Aaron. If you would look at her resume, her qualifications, her credentials, and her references, you would know that that's the automatic candidate. But it's not. It's an election. And something that you probably can hear on the microphone is we're not real polished politicians. I mean, I'm a worker. I work hard. I work with kids. I try to do the best I can. We have Jennifer, who's a nurse. You know, we're workers. And Lisa is an attorney. And she's a darn good attorney. And we've seen her in the past. She's a darn good prosecutor. So we may not be as polished as, you know, some professional politicians, but we are just like everybody else. We work hard and we want what is right. And if you want what is right, you're going to vote for Lisa Aaron.
Woohoo!
There we go. Jennifer?
Thank you. I can't I don't think I can top that one, Mark. It is an honor to be on Lisa's team. And I'm so happy that she's willing to take this upon herself to make Kauai a better place. And I'm really happy to be right alongside with her and Mark and all the others that are fighting for a safer Kauai, as Lisa sees her vision to be. You know, Mark's right. We're regular people. We're the faces of each other. We're our community, and we're in it. We're working it. We're just like everybody else, and I think everybody does want to be, you know, part of a happy community and safe and have places for our kids and to be able to play and grow up safely and have our elders be able to be safe in their workplaces and know that justice is being served. And if you want that vision, then you need to all vote for Lisa.
There we go. Lisa, your final comments.
Thank you. So like the caller did say that I look like a tough cookie, and our campaign slogan is a strong prosecutor for a safe Kauai. And I am strong and I am a tough cookie, but I have to tell you, during this campaigning process, one of the best things that happened to me was one day I was at court and there was Kapuna, a lady sitting outside one of the courthouse rooms on a bench. And I was trying to get to my next courtroom, and she said, "Lisa Aaron." And I thought, wow, you know, as a prosecutor, I didn't know what she was going to say. And I thought maybe I prosecuted someone in her family or something like that. And she said, she looked at me, and she said, "Lisa Aaron, I'm voting for you because you have a heart." And I was pretty speechless, and I just thanked her. And you know, it's true. I am strong and I am a tough cookie, but I have a heart. And I think that when you look at achieving justice, you have to. These are people's lives we're dealing with. We're dealing with community members. We're dealing with victims, and we're dealing with defendants. And so doing your best, working hard, having a heart, and having experience all matters.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Lisa Aaron, and good luck with your campaign. Thank you, Mark, for joining us, and Jennifer as well. We are about out of time. I will play a couple more from the, if you will, the cart, and then go out with another version of the classic, I Fought the Law. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Callers, thank you for joining the conversation next week. I'm not quite sure who will be in the hot seat. Jonathan Jay, I think, is still on forced sabbatical, and I've been doing this for the last couple of 3 weeks, so I'm not planning to come in, but we'll see what develops. And it's been a fun Thursday afternoon. Enjoy summer, and sorry, phone call, you're going to come on after the show.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Dove presents Manifest 3, Xavier Rudd, Bobby Alou, Shiloh Pa, Sashimon, Root Hub, and more. Sunday, June 26th, at the Church of the Pacific Outdoor Amphitheater. Gates open at noon, show starts at 1 p.m., Xavier Rudd starts at 7 p.m. Tickets at Hanalei Harvest Market, Kilauea Healthy Hut, Papayas Natural Foods in Kapa'a, Progressive Expressions in Koloa. All ages welcome. More information at dovepresents.com. 635-5556. Manifest 3 with Xavier Rudd from Australia, Sunday, June 26th.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington. For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste, kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
There we go. Recycle your e-waste. And mahalo to everyone out there again for participating in your community radio. I'm out. See you in a couple of weeks. And Lisa, mahalo for joining us. Good luck, Justin. The county prosecutor's office, an important office, and we have an election coming up. So we will keep you guys posted on the next time. We'll have some candidates and candidate forums here on Out of the Box and Kauai Soapbox. Stay tuned for the evolution that is happening on the airwaves. We'll be here in moments. Slim is doing double duty tonight on a Thursday, and the Commodore coming in around 2 with his Loco Moco spicy sauce coming in on the Station Loves You, Kauai Community Radio.